So let's fire up the Batmanmobile, go to a taco stand and eat some feelings, okay?
Okay, I think it's Batmobile.
Batmanmobile.
Batmobile.
That's what I said, Batmanmobile.
You're putting the there's no man, it's just Batmobile.
Batmanmobile.
Batmobile. Drop the man.
Batmanmobile.
Batmobile.
Batmobile.
TBTL.
Hey, somebody has run out on the field. Some goofball in a hat and a red shirt. Now he takes off the shirt. He's running down the middle by the 50. He's at the 30. He's bare-chested and banging his chest. Now he runs the opposite way. He runs at the 50. He runs at the 40. The guy is drunk, but there he goes.
So look, why don't you download my blog? It's free. Of course, we do appreciate donations.
I'm the king of the castle, and you're the dirty rascal. Crash into me. Crash into me.
I believe it was Benjamin Franklin who said, "You have reached the end of your free trial membership at BenjaminFranklinQuotes.com.
What a wise man.
What's on the agenda, my friend?
All right, hello, good morning, and welcome everybody to a Tuesday edition of TBTL.
Scatman's World.
The show that just might be too beautiful to live. My name's Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
It's a kind of magic.
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. I decided to drink roughly 50% of a bubbly sparkling water, a can, 12 fluid ounces, 355 milliliters, if you're listening on the metric system. And that was a bad idea because I am battling, as our friend Sean DeTore would call it, the repeats. So forgive me. It's a nice day here in the Bay City. It's supposed to be sunny this afternoon. Had a lovely little jog this morning. Not too many people out there, but I did that thing. And any joggers or runners in our audience who track themselves can maybe identify with this behavior. I do the same route every single morning since the pandemic struck, and it's designed to try to avoid people. And I know exactly how far it is. It's exactly 2 miles out and 2 miles back. But sometimes my little watch decides that I haven't gone 2 miles, even though I run to a fixed point. So then when I get home, there's like 3/10 or 4/10 of a mile I need to make up. Even though I know that I did the distance, I have to run laps around my house to get it to the exactly 4 mile mark. And
really? I'm trying to build my beef castle?
The dog was mystified this morning as she looked out the window and just saw me running around the house 2 or 3 times. Anyway, that was my morning so far. It's time to get to episode 3170 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
There we go. Okay. Whew. I did it, guys. Got rid of the dragon that was lurking within me. And now I'm really ready to do the show. Okay, good. We may never see another buffet or salad bar in this country.
What about macaroni? Let me finish. Salad.
Because of the pandemic, the business model that has collapsed maybe most profoundly and most quickly was places where you and a bunch of people you don't know could all manhandle the same chicken strips. Soup Plantation, one of the very first restaurant chains to bite the dust, and they are thinking that we may not see buffets and salad bars coming back after all this, so we'll talk about that. Also, we have some announcements about the plan for the TBTL-a-thon next week.
I'm so excited about this show.
And how we're going to be interacting with all of you, the tens of listeners. I'm very, very excited about this, so we'll make that announcement. And should clear face masks be more common? For people who are deaf or hard of hearing, they can't read lips if you're behind a face mask. So people are making face masks that have a clear sort of plastic window pane in them. And let me tell you, my friends, it is unsettling. But it that is a real issue, too. I mean, for people that read lips as a way of understanding other people. This is a very weird time for them, as it is for all of us, I guess. So we'll talk about that, too, and emails and V-mails. And we'll also chat with this young man, the longest-running Cobro of the show. He's going to get all anecdotal on you, talking about his drawings of tall ships, their grace, their splendor. He was recently bitten by a tick, and I think he's starting to show signs of something being up.
Yeah, it says one of the symptoms to look out for is if after several days you start talking weird.
He is Andrew Walsh, and he's joining me right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my friend.
The problem with that isn't even me, my joke about weird. It's the fact that I can't say the word symptom. I sound like a shit salesman with a mouthful of samples. It's terrible. Weird. The weird part I stand by.
It makes me laugh every time I hear it.
Weird. By the way, I did that joke
real
on...
Real Owen Meany shit.
I did that joke on Genevieve. I recycled a TV Tale joke in my own kitchen to make Genevieve laugh this weekend, and it worked. In fact, I think I delivered it better to her, and we had a whole conversation about whether or not it's professional for me to be workshopping my stuff on TBTL so that I can have it perfected for my girlfriend. Seems like the tail wagging the dog a little bit.
Oh, man. When I, back in the olden days, probably my early 20s, mid-20s, I still kind of entertained the idea of trying to do stand-up comedy or maybe be a stand-up comedian. And so I was always keeping little notebooks of bits and would try my bits out on people, but then I would say, but this is not a bit. But oftentimes it was. Now Twitter has really replaced that. Mm. Twitter has really scratched that itch. If I, I don't feel like I need to go be a stand-up comedian because I can bore people virtually via my Twitter spoofs.
Well, it is interesting. It's not interesting, but it's something that I can talk about, is how I use Twitter sometimes as a way of just marking something in time. The obvious example is when I take photos of my garbage cans at the curb and I tweet them out so that there's a timestamp in case the collectors skip our house. I can say, well, look, they were at the curb. That's the obvious and clunky example. Mm-hmm. But for another example, I mentioned in yesterday's show that I found somebody's driver's license on the ground. And I tweeted. Yeah. They had a name that was unique, and so I found them very easily on Twitter. It was very clear it was the person. I tweeted at that person and said, hey, I...
Was it PJ Woodchurch?
It was. And I said, I found your crime stick. Is that what you're referring to? Are you talking about the Mr. Show skit?
That was what I was talking about. Okay.
Anyway, so I tweeted at him. I'm like, hey, email me at andrew@tbtl.net and I'll get your ID back to you. And then yesterday as I was mailing that, I thought, oh, I should delete that tweet. And then I thought, well, if I ever want a record of when did I find that ID, why would I want a record of it? I don't know. But sometimes you can remember one thing and not another and you think, didn't that happen? Didn't that TBTL-a-thon happen right when I found that ID? Maybe I can go back and see when I tweeted at this person. I don't know. There was something about like keeping it in my timeline that made me feel like, oh, good, I may need to remember this someday.
The thing that gets me, I don't obviously do Facebook, but Carrie will forward me things sometimes, and it'll just be like, and I saw our friend Christy Wise, who we mentioned this last week, had something come up on one of those services, I assume Facebook, that says, 11 years ago today, Luke threw out the first pitch, and I met Jen Andrews, and like, it'll be, Carrie will send me something, it'll be like 7 years ago today, and it'll just be like, Rudy will be a puppy, and she'll be sitting on, you know, my chest as I'm lying on the couch or something. And it's just like, those things really do kind of get me, I guess. Not like I don't have an overly emotional reaction to them, but it's just like, you're living your life, and then you see a photo that's like, this was 8 years ago on this day, and you just have this moment of reflection on how different everything feels and also how the same everything feels.
Yeah, I think I've said this on the show before too, but I think this has to do with age, but it's very weird for me how everything since 2000 doesn't seem to have an era. I know it does, and I know I'll bet you especially younger listeners or younger people who are maybe who came up in the early 2000s feel like, oh yeah, gosh, this thing feels really 2005 versus this other thing that feels very 2015. Whereas for me, after the year 2000, is all a blur. Like the 2000s versus the 2010s, I don't feel the cultural differences there, probably because I was paying attention to culture in a very different way, as opposed to growing up. Like I have a very specific feel for the 80s and 90s and then the early 2000s.
Speaking of huge moments in pop culture, the TBTL-a-thon 11, Let's Stay Together, is happening next week. Andrew and I are going to be quarantining together in a safe, undisclosed location, broadcasting the show live Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. West Coast. You'll be able to call in. You can stream the show live. You can chat about it with your friends. And in the afternoons, we are going to be hanging out virtually with you, the tens of listeners. I'm very excited about this, Andrew. We're going to have a series of what we're calling the TBTL Show and Tell Hour. We are literally going to do show and tell with the tens, because a lot of you, most of you presumably, are sitting at home. You're probably surrounded by tchotchkes and things that are meaningful. And so what we're going to do is each day we're going to hang out with a time zone of the country, a quadrant of the country, and literally just hang out on Zoom and do show and tell. Like, we're going to bring some stuff to the undisclosed location. Y'all will have your stuff at your home. Monday is going to be the Eastern time zone. Tuesday will be the Central time zone. Wednesday will be Mountain. And then Thursday will be the West Coast. And I believe on Wednesday, we're also going to try to do something with the international listeners. So we're actually going to do two show and tell seshes on Wednesday. I've got it all written down somewhere. We are actually going to put together some kind of a template, a web page, or some indicator of when this is all happening and how you can be part of it. But the basic thing is, we are going to be virtually hanging out with you doing show and tell based on time zone. So that's thing number one I'm excited about. Are you excited for the show and tell hour, Andrew?
Yeah, of course. I already have several of the things that I want to bring to show and tell picked out. Some of them are, you know, skin issues, but aside from that, I also have some objects around here that I want
talk
to show
about
people.
Picking them out.
Hey! No, I'm really excited about it. Do you have your stuff? Do you have your stuff picked out yet, or some ideas?
Well, I'm going to bring one thing that rhymes with Maytime Memmy. To
this is what show and tell is. Oh, I get it.
Yeah.
All right, I'll find some other things too. I think I won a Pinewood Derby award. I'll bring that.
Oh my god, dude, if you have a Pinewood Derby car, please bring it. I'm gonna build one this weekend, and then we're gonna race them at our undisclosed location.
I do. I'll bet you that, you know, I got rid of a lot of stuff. I didn't hang on to stuff as I got older, but there's no way I threw away my Pinewood Derby car. That thing was sleek, man. It was like a lime green with a yellow kind of, I believe, some sort of a racing stripe, or I think maybe even like kind of a wedge painted on the top of it to make it go fast. And it did win something. I can't remember what.
Do you think they still do that, by the way?
Probably.
I mean, I remember that just... That was everything to me when I was a kid. I only did it maybe once or twice. I think it was even maybe at our church or something. But I just remember. I remember that the actual Pinewood Derby, which, if you don't know, it's this thing where kids will, you know, make a little wooden car and put some kind of like lead weight in it. And then you race them down this track. I remember the track being at a mall for some reason. And it felt performative. I was so drawn to anything that was vaguely performative when I was a kid, which will come as no surprise to the listeners based on me now. But I remember it being in a mall and just being like, oh my God, if I win this in front of all these people, this will be amazing. I did not. I don't think I came in last, but I was not anywhere near the top.
I'm looking at, it's so weird to be looking at Boys Life magazine online. Boys Life is, of course, or maybe not of course, but it was the magazine that it was associated with the Cub Scouts, right? And I used to get a subscription to that. Were you actually a Cub Scout or a Boy Scout?
I was a Royal Ranger, which was the Christian version, although I never moved past the ranking of Straight Arrow, which was like the lowest level, the entry level of being a Royal Ranger.
Were you guys, was it like an Inquisition? Is that the difference? You guys would go out and make sure people were converting to the church otherwise?
Probably, all joking aside, I think there was a heavy proselytizing element to it.
So I always associate Pinewood Derby specifically with Cub Scouts, maybe Boy Scouts, but I think of Cub Scouts. But I guess it's not limited to just that. Boys Life magazine, though, does have a feature here online, How to Make a Fast Pinewood Derby Car, which I like the straightforwardness of that headline.
Yeah. So Andrew's going to bring his Pinewood Derby car. I'm going to bring my Maytime Memmi. And we look forward to hanging out with all of you and seeing what it is you want to do show and tell over. I mean, I just remember show and tell being the highlight of grade school. It was like I looked so forward to it. And maybe just because it was easier than doing math or something, but I just have such positive associations with show and tell from being a kid. So we're going to do that. And then, and this is a biggie too, Friday night, you know, we're going to do a live show that we're going to stream via YouTube. And we're going to actually, I'm calling it, and I think this is a pretty elegant name, Andrew, TBTL10s, Do They Have Talent? What Kind? Let's watch them and find out. So it's going to be the TBTL talent show. And what we need you to do is show us your talent in 1 minute or less. Your talent, your kid's talent, your pet's talent, whatever. Make us a video of 1 minute or less.
1 minute.
And we are going to put all those together. I don't know how many we're going to get. Like if we get 100 videos, we're going to have to figure out a system for them. But the idea is that we want to play your videos. So this will be happening. You know, everyone will be able to tune into YouTube. Andrew and I will be there in our safe, undisclosed location. I'll be flanked by a series of awards and statues and things like that. And then we're going to play these different videos. We're going to basically do kind of a virtual talent show. So if you would like to show off your talents or your kids' talents or your pet's talents or whatever, you got to send us a video. We're figuring out the mechanism for that, and we'll have that information in the next day or two. But in the meantime, start thinking on what your talent is and be ready to send it in to us. We're going to do the TBTL10's talent show on Friday night, June 5th.
I'm excited. I have one talent that I'm ready to show off. It involves a skin irritation.
How is that going, by the way?
Everything is fine. I'm just joking.
Yeah.
I was just thinking how gross that would be. No, everything is fine. And also, I think for the talent show, I don't think that you and I are necessarily going to perform. I mean, our talent, obviously, is bringing joy to the tens of listeners, right? So, I mean, we'll be doing that just, mm-hmm. I mean, that's just the default. So we will be mostly focusing on the listeners and the talents that they send in. And yeah, I don't know how many we'll get, but
I did have an idea yesterday for you to dress like a California raisin.
Oh yeah,
because that was the last time you were in a talent show, and I was going to dress like Dirty Dan, the world's dirtiest man. I never have taken a shower, because that was a Shel Silverstein poem I recited at the Snow King Stars of Tomorrow talent show.
Yes, which I could probably. I mean, the problem is I got bigger, but black garbage bags have not. So the recreating of the California raisin outfit will take a little bit more engineering and creativity. But I could maybe pull it off. I don't know. We will see.
Did you have gloves?
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, I had a pair of white gardening gloves that I think I then used to garden.
And did you have sunglasses?
That I don't remember. I remember that my backup dancers, who had a coordinated dance number that they did behind me, and they were really the stars of the show, their heads were not shown. Which, looking back, boy, what's more 80s than having three kids in a talent show whose heads are literally inside black garbage bags? That doesn't sound like something we would allow now. Mine was the only head popping
Everybody,
out of the
let's chain the doors, and all adults light a cigarette.
Yeah.
Let's make this really safe.
Yeah. My head was popping out because I was the lead, quote unquote, singer, but I was really lip syncing.
If you're not the lead raisin, the view never changes. I have that on a Big Johnson's t-shirt somewhere.
It doesn't change, because all you see is the blackness of the inside of the garbage bag.
Oh, my God. That's so funny. So you had headless California raisins dancing behind you. I find it interesting that you were the lead raisin, because, I mean, would you have described yourself as a fairly shy kid?
Yeah. This memory, while very... Rich, does not fit in with the rest of my childhood memories, which is funny. I don't know how this plan was concocted. I mean, there are elements of this that just don't make sense in many ways. First of all, yeah, I was the lead raisin with, I believe, three raisins behind me, maybe two. And I remember some of these were like some cooler kids, and they were kids who weren't necessarily hanging out with me or being nice to me. How they ended up being my, not just like being part of this presentation with me, but also that I was the lead and they were my backup dancers, that makes no sense. What makes even less sense is my sister choreographed their dance number. Like, me and my sister did not get along at all. We were not collaborators, as they say in the raisin biz. So how she kind of got involved, but she did create some snazzy dance moves. And I remember being in our basement and these kids came over. I think one of them was Scott. And I think one of them was Dylan, I want to say, and maybe Nathan, and they would come over, and my sister was teaching them dance moves while I lip synced literally to a version of Under the Boardwalk, Heard It Through the Grapevine, that I taped off of the radio, and I had to fade it quickly at the end because you could hear the announcer's voice come in.
I love, did you add that to the lip sync? Coming to King's Dominion.
No, I just tried to fade in and out of it as fast as possible. Now, remember, it wasn't even on a good cassette tape. Later on, as I become an audio nerd, I start buying the good cassette tapes. I remember this was on like one of those black cassette tapes that were not translucent at all. They were like from the 70s or early 80s.
Was that like a TDK or a Memorex or a TDK?
Maybe like a TDK or something. But the kind that you would see in like, and I think maybe even the thing that I taped it off the... can't remember how I taped it off the radio. I think I had my my stereo set up at that point. But I also had this black kind of portable recorder from the 1960s that was my mom's that I would carry around. And I think I had some leftover tapes from that. So these were some early cassette tapes.
Is it possible that you were not quite as shy or maybe by your own description slightly nerdy than in your childhood than you remember being? Because this doesn't sound – I mean, you got a Dylan – you got a Scott backing you up, a Nathan. I mean, this is you're the star. You're the big cheese, the head raisin. Is it possible that you misremember your childhood?
No, this doesn't fit the rest. I mean, yeah, no, this is an outlier for some reason. The only other outlier was also performative based, where I somehow landed the Santa Claus role. One of three Santa Claus roles. They divided it up so we would share the spotlight. And so maybe I had a little bit of a flair for theater when I was very young. But no, these were outliers.
Did you ever get to do any cool, interesting voices when you were acting?
Weird!
Like maybe the early version of that character?
I remember playing in the woods, getting bitten by a bunch of insects, and then, yeah, yeah. You're right. Then I suddenly, people were like, hey, do your monologue again. Do your swimming to Valley City monologue. That is such a hit.
Is that a Spalding Gray
it
reference?
It certainly is, my friend.
I love it. Oh, man. We're going to watch all of Spalding Gray's work when we're quarantined
I wish
together.
We could find more of it. I was just going through a bunch of movies that I have on a hard drive, and I do have Swimming to Cambodia on it. I didn't rewatch it, but like that's all I have of him. But he's got a vast body of work that I would like to tap into, but I always find it difficult to find.
Okay. Well, that's the plan, everybody. Next week, we're going to do the show and tell, and then we're also going to do the talent show. So, like I said, we haven't quite figured out the best way for you to send us your one-minute videos, but be thinking on those, and we will get that ironed out in the next day or two, and we will tell you where to send them. We got to take a quick break because I'll tell you what, this bubbly water is coming back on me. Got to go, I don't know what, do some kind of home surgery and try to fix this, because the top stories are quite interesting today, including... the hip-hop song that does sample Bruce Hornsby. Yesterday, I randomly said, I wonder if any hip-hoppers have ever sampled That's Just the Way It Is. And yeah, like many of them have. And Bruce Hornsby has done interviews about all the hip-hoppers who have sampled his song. So we'll talk about that too. Coming up in a moment on TBTL.
Hey, Luke.
Yep.
If you can't stop burping and you need some help, I can probably take over the show. Weird.
A prayer for Andrew Meany.
Weird.
Come on, come on. I see no changes. Wake up in the morning and I ask myself, is life worth living? Should I blast myself? I'm tired of being poor and even worse, I'm black. My stomach hurts, so I'm looking for a purse to snatch. Cops give a damn about a Negro. Pull a trigger, killing, he's a hero. Get it to the kids, who the hell cares?
This is Changes by Tupac. Of course, this is like probably the most famous song that samples Bruce Hornsby. I don't know how it is, because I used to really actually like Tupac. I don't know how it is I forgot this yesterday when I was musing about Bruce Hornsby's music being used by rappers. It's been used by Wyclef, E-40, Snoop, and then, of course, Tupac. L.A. Weekly did an interview with Bruce Hornsby back in 2011. A guy named Ben Westhoff was writing about the relationship between Bruce Hornsby's music and hip-hop, in particular, the Tupac song. And he asked he asked Bruce Hornsby if he ever got to meet Tupac, and Bruce Hornsby said, I never actually got to meet him. As you know, of course, he recorded his version of my song, which I think was his biggest hit. A year after he was assassinated, I got a cassette in the mail from the Shakur Foundation saying, we found this song. It's going to be the single on his greatest hits album, which is coming out. And then Bruce Hornsby says, the original version of Changes was a lot dirtier and had a lot of the N-word. They took that out for the single. I did not request that. It's their creation. It wasn't my place to say anything. But Bruce Hornsby also is described in this article as being a devoted Christian Scientist, which I didn't know. And then he tells the story of how they basically, he says, the senator in Virginia for years was Chuck Robb. My wife and I supported him. We got invited to his Christmas party in the late 90s when Tupac's Greatest Hits came out. My wife decided we should listen to it on the drive. So we get to the senator's house, and there are a bunch of parking attendants, African-American parking attendants. We open the car, and I didn't know this, but the next song to come on the Tupac tape was Hit 'Em Up, and the timing was hilarious. The parking attendants were ready to get the keys, and the lyrics are, I bleeped your bleep, you fat bleep came on. These guys fell out. They looked at me first in horror. Then they started laughing like crazy. I love the idea of Bruce Hornsby getting out of his car, blasting Tupac, and a bunch of parking attendants are like, what the actual?
I'm a little confused about what he's saying about the song Changes. So he was familiar with the album version that had come out while Tupac was still alive, and then the foundation said, hey, here's a remix, a clean remix that we're putting on the greatest hits. Is that what he's saying? Or did Changes not maybe come out at all until posthumously?
See, that's a fact that I should have investigated, because you're right. The timeline's a little blurry to me too. Is it that, like, I'm sure we could figure this out by Googling it, but I don't know the answer to that. If he was alive when Changes came out, or if that was, like you said, posthumous. The other thing that I thought was kind of interesting about the song is that, you know, the Bruce Hornsby song goes, that's just the way it is. Some things will never change. And it's sort of songs about, I think the song is about sort of the injustices of this country. And the Ben Westhoff writing in L.A. Weekly said, do you find it weird the chorus on Changes, the Tupac song, is that things will never be the same, which is the opposite of the chorus on That's Just the Way It Is? And Bruce Hornsby says, I thought it was a positive message. I didn't think it was a negative message. And also, I must say, I liked the checks. Because, of course, he's getting paid off of – I mean, he probably made more money on Changes than Tupac did. Or at least I'm sure he got a healthy, healthy sum because of it sampling his song. Ben Westhoff goes on to ask, have you made more money from the song Changes by Tupac or your original song The Way It Is? And Bruce Hornsby says, probably the original, but barely. Like, the Tupac version of his song has probably made him almost as much money as the original song. He goes, if you want to get into it, there's not much of an appetite in rap and R&B for oldies radio, even though it's pervasive as hell in rock. So I think my version just continues. It's a recurrent. There's no real outlet for rap oldies. So his point is he's making more money on The Way It Is because they keep playing that song on the radio, at least back in 2011 when this interview happened. But he was pointing out that there's not really that sort of there's not an oldies rap station, really, although there is K-Day in LA.
There is, and that K-Day format has actually blossomed recently. There's a version here in Seattle now that I want to say is 103.7 or 106.7. Do you know?
Oh, it's probably – is it what used to be the Mountain, 103.7?
Maybe. I can look that up.
That would make sense.
But, yeah, classic hip-hop is a real genre on the radio now, and it's very genre, which is very popular with people of my ilk, I believe.
So it may Bruce Hornsby may still make even more money off of Changes by Tupac, because I'm sure they're playing it on K-Day and on whatever that station is in Seattle. It's a, you know, a hit song. And then this was, I don't know why this jumped out at me, but the reporter in L.A. says, mentions K-Day, that station, and says, speaking of which, you're from Virginia, but you lived in L.A. for a while, right? He goes, I live back in Virginia now, but I lived in L.A. during the 80s, during what Tom Wolfe called the me decade. I went out there to try to get something going, and I was lucky, and then, I'm going to use a swear word here, and then I got the fuck out. I was never a big fan of the smog or the traffic. What I'm wondering is, are Christian Scientists allowed to swear? He's described as a devoted Christian Scientist, but then he just gratuitously drops the F-bomb in this interview with the LA Weekly. I don't like the idea of Bruce Hornsby using the F-word.
Really? I like the idea of Bruce Hornsby using the F-word. That's the huge difference between us. That's always been the divide, looking back.
Yeah.
By the way, it is 103.7, by the way, hot 103.7, 100% throwback. So that's the old mountain, is that correct?
That is such a mind bleep for me. If I was Bruce Hornsby, I'd use the real word there, but I'm not that way. That is a mind bleep for me because for years, one of my favorite commercial radio stations in Seattle was 103.7 The Mountain. They had Marty and Jody in the morning, Marty Reamer, who also used to do afternoons there. I used to sometimes would be his traffic reporter. We had a great time. They did the 520 Funny, and the musical style was very like, how would I describe it? A lot of Tracy Chapman, a lot of Bonnie Raitt, a lot of sort of guitar, like singer-songwriter music, David Gray. They played a lot of David Gray, and I just liked it, a lot of Indigo Girls. It was just like a cool station, and they would do live shows all the time. They had like a mountain music stage where they would have people come in. Like, it was just a cool quality radio station that had good DJs and played kind of good music, at least mostly good music. A lot of like Where Have All the Cowboys Gone, that song.
Oh, yeah.
If you want to kind of understand the genre. Anyway, the idea – and I love classic hip-hop, so it's not like – I'm not saying it's a step down, but it's just – that is like in my mind, that's like the Indigo Girls are now just covering back that ass up. Like, it's just like those two styles of radio play or whatever radio music that would be on a radio station are so different to me that it's odd for me to contemplate that.
103.7 is now broadcasting The Mountain as a secondary HD stream on HD2. Should we take a little bit of a listen to this?
Yes. Oh my God. Shadow play that we're casting
on the cabin wall. You're listening to The Mountain, Seattle, Seattle's adult rock.
And how are you, are you streaming that?
I'm just streaming it off the web, yeah. Because I typed in The Mountain, Seattle, and it turns out that, yeah, it's still the same call letters, KT, whatever it was, I don't have it in front of me right now.
MT.
KTMT. But yeah, so they have an HD channel, and it's still branded The Mountain, and right now this song is When I'm Gonna Lose You by Local Natives. I don't know that band.
Oh, okay. They come up on some of the Pandora stations I listen to. That's interesting. I wonder what the business model is for that. Like,
I know.
Is anyone listening to it besides us? And do they have commercials? And is it just an algorithm? Do they have DJs? Does someone have to program that music, i.e. pick it?
You know, this is a little to the side of this, but, you know, with our Volkswagen, we now have access to HD stations too, which is something that I don't think I ever had before in my car, and I was just like flipping, and I don't even know if I have to. I don't know. I guess if you're just flipping in order, it'll just stop on these stations. I don't know exactly what it is, but I remember last summer I discovered it because I was flipping through the FM dial and came across the feed for our AM radio station, 710 ESPN, and it was on the FM dial, and it sounded better, and I was like, no. I don't like it sounding better. I want AM radio to sound a little tinny. And so I went back to AM.
That's like when you have that motion flow or whatever they call it on the TV so that things look a little bit too sort of realistic.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's a show, like if it's sports, I'm into that. But if it's like, particularly if it's an older show, I don't want to see, Matlock in too kind of clear, normal, like I want it to have a certain gauze to it, a certain remove from the reality. Although here's the opposite of that, Andrew. I got into this thing called I think it's called time corrected these things that are called time corrected or motion corrected old movies. Like literally, like in New York City in 1911, someone was just walking around setting up like a movie camera, and they were just filming things, people getting off of the Staten Island Ferry, like horse and buggies and stuff. But what the time correction element of it is, they take out all the jitteriness. Part of why I heard actually Conan O'Brien and Pete Holmes talking about this is how I learned about it. Part of why, if you watch an old, you know, movie from that era, like old black and white silent film, the people don't seem like real people because it's all that kind of like jittery, weird motion, and it's so unrelatable. But what they're able to do with computers now is smooth it all out, and it's really interesting and kind of eerie, because what you realize is these are real people with real lives. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not weird, jittery people in like buttoned up high, you know, collars, like walking down the street with a parasol. They're like a human being with hopes and dreams. And when they look at the camera and it's all kind of the motion is or whatever it's called is corrected, it's really interesting and really eerie.
I'm watching it now. Trip Through New York City, 1911, speed corrected and motion
speed corrected.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of them. I'm seeing a lot of motion correction here too. But I think they're similar things. I think you can motion correct something and speed correct. The one I'm watching is speed correction. But I see what you mean. You don't have that feeling of, oh yeah, back in 1911, everybody was walking around quickly with piano music right. playing behind them, right? Like,
right.
Oh, yeah,
exactly.
These are normal people. Who's when the wind blows, their clothes react in a way that is very recognizable, which is a strange thing to say, but it makes a difference.
And what they've done too, if you were to turn the audio up, I don't think there was obviously audio on this, but they've added it. This, I think MoMA did this. And so you're also getting all the sounds of the city, and it's just very, very intriguing. Should we just play this under the show always?
I'm happy to do that. We've come
1911.
We've come close to this before. I feel like it would be fun if we just do a week of programming where we decide we're going to and really commit to it. For, like, let's say the middle section of every show, we do it from a fake location, and we have ambient sounds from that location. Is it corny? Yes. Is it maybe a terrible idea? Sure, I don't know. We also produce thousands and thousands of these shows. If we dedicated five of them to this stupid bit, would it really be that bad?
I am trying to find this article that I sent you, Andrew, about the end of the salad bar.
Oh, yeah, CNN.
This is what I get the one time that I don't print something out. Hold on, I've got to go back and get the link. This is something I hadn't really thought about, but, like, of course – Self-serve salad bars and all-you-can-eat buffets face an uncertain future in the age of coronavirus. This is Ethan Harp writing for CNN. This article centers around Soup Plantation, which also known as sweet tomatoes in some places.
Did you know that?
I don't know why. No, I had no idea. I've always found Soup Plantation to be just the weirdest name. Mm-hmm. I don't think you ever want to put plantation in the name of anything anymore. It also sounds like you're supplanting something, which is really to sort of – it feels sinister. And then, of course, it always reminds me of Party Down.
Right.
Super Crackers.
Exactly. And you're focusing on soup, which is probably not – I've never been to a soup plantation. I assume that they
and
have
And you never
good
will.
Soup, but yeah. But it seems weird because that's what they want to really focus – you're right. It's like a three-pronged approach of bad marketing from my perspective.
Also, sweet tomatoes, I don't –
dirty.
Like, the other name you have is Sweet Tomatoes?
Hey,
is that
Sweet Tomatoes. Hey, Sweet Tomatoes. Bring those carbon copies over here.
Like, it sounds a little harassy. Or has anyone ever been like, God, you know what I could go for right now? Some good old Sweet Tomatoes.
Right, yeah.
No, that's not a flavor profile.
How are the tomatoes? Not sweet enough.
It was sweet. Yeah. It was weird. We were watching Schitt's Creek last night, and it was the episode where there's the Bert Herflinger wines,
and like just
the descriptions of the flavor profiles of those wines were just so, like, they'd probably now with sweet tomatoes, like that would be a wine flavor that Bert Herflinger would have or whatever his name was.
Yes.
So I'm sure it's very nice people that work at Soup Plantation, and it's a bummer that they're out of a job, but they interviewed somebody from the company, John Haywood, chief, he's the CEO of the restaurant group that owns these. And he basically said, like, before they even had to close, like before it was illegal for Soup Plantation to be open, people just stopped going. Like, and they're closed like forever. They're not just like, they're not just riding out the COVID, according to this article. They're just pretty much done. And it was like, it, but it was like one of these things where the customers indicated they no longer wanted to be a part of this kind of a thing. They just stopped coming. And so now they're just probably not ever going to come back. I mean, remember when we were in Missouri in the buffet district of like Springfield, Missouri?
Yeah, that was rough.
That was so weird. Like, and it was so much seafood for being really landlocked.
Yeah, that was the other thing, too. Yeah, it was hard to kind of avoid that. Was it Springfield? Is that what it was? It, that was the town that had the big Cabela's in it. Is that correct?
Yeah. Was it a Cabela's or a Bass Pro Shop?
It was I think
one
it was
of those.
Bass, yeah.
And anyway. We were trying to stay in like a hotel that was built to mimic the Bass Pro Shop, but it was sold out. Do you remember that?
Yes. That it was a hotel that had it had been a Days Inn or something, and the person who picked us up because we were hitchhiking was going to drop
was
us off.
Was that the lady
there.
Who lied about drawing the logo?
Yes.
Is that the
yes,
lady who lied about drawing the logo for her cleaning company?
She was
drove us there?
The chain-smoking lady who was getting into a bit of an argument with her daughter on speakerphone, especially after her daughter found out that she had picked up hitchhikers again.
And she was mad at us. She seemed kind of mad at us the whole time, but also was giving us a ride.
She seemed cranky at first, but I think that was just her demeanor. She was actually very soft. We offered her some gas money at the end, I recall, and she was like, no, we don't take gas money from – this is how the world works. It was a very sweet –
And I was like –
Sweet thing.
Little did we know she was lying about her designing the logo.
That's right.
For her cleaning company. I was like, listen, for this $20, you could buy four unlimited fish dinners just down the road.
By the way, I wanted to say about this article, though, Golden Corral has not – this isn't necessarily officially the end of all of these restaurants. It is
right.
Soup Plantation had – paused their operation, and then the FDA came out and said, yeah, like during Corona, like we cannot have this kind of service at all. They're like, well, we're not going to pull through this, like, and the world is changing. We're just making this permanent.
We got 800 pounds of shrimp that's just gone bad in the back room. We're done. We'll never find it. In the words of the Tiger King, I will never financially recover from this.
If anybody has 800 pounds of spoiled shrimp, please bring it to TBTL Show and Tell next week, because I really want to see that. I want a close up so I can see the flies. But Golden Corral has not totally thrown in the towel yet, nor has Old Country Buffet. Although, of course, they are, or Hometown Buffet, which, if you think about it, those are three different places. Which, and I know I'm coming off as very snobby here. I don't have anything against these places. In fact, there have been many a time where I think, like, boy, if I had access to an Old Country Buffet right now, I would go. Like, there are definitely times. Until you and I read that article about a year ago that really went into detail from the perspective of somebody who loves these restaurants but says, after I did some research, I don't think I can go to these places anymore because essentially they're salmonella farms, right?
Yeah, that's the whole issue here. And when I was trying to refine this article and I Googled it, I noticed that there's been a lot of reporting around this, even like Marketplace. Our colleagues, technically, have done pieces on this. Just the idea that, like, you have something that was already kind of vectory, and now we're most of us that aren't in Lake of the Ozarks in a swimming pool trying to die. You see those photos?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, it's Lake of the Ozark.
Oh, no. It does have a funny name. Is it actually – you're making fun of me because I called it it's Lake of the Smozarks, right? Isn't that it? No?
But,
sorry, I'm a little slow on the uptake today.
That was a long, like, 2 week old half of a joke. So I don't blame you for not immediately registering my hilarity. But no, just like these things are already a little vectory. And yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to not sound. Listen, if people saw what I am eating on a daily basis, if people knew that last night at 10:30 p.m. I pounded an entire bag of Gardein fake chicken nuggets, Andrew, and I didn't even cook them. I just ate them frozen. No, I did cook them.
I believed you. That's the reputation that you've established. I was like, wow.
No, it's like I can't get on any kind of high horse about people eating at Old Country Buffet when I am like I was eating something that is arguably less good than anything you would get at Old Country Buffet, sitting on my porch, working on our special project that you and I have been doing kind of on the side here related to TBTL, and just eating Gardein fake chicken nuggets.
Yeah. So. And, you know, I'm going to be earnest here for a second, which is probably not a great place to take it, but this doesn't hit me hard, right? Like I say, I have a nostalgia for these places, and I'm certainly not too good for them, but I also, just as a practical matter, have not been to this type of buffet in a really long time, mostly because they're not around here. But if there was one at the mall, I guarantee it that I would have been going a lot, or maybe not a lot, but certainly more than I have been. But I know that there are some people who this is probably kind of a marker of how things are changing in a way that really kind of sucks for them. And like, we all have it in our different ways, right? Like I was talking to my dad this weekend and he was talking about, you know, what the plans for his parish are. He's a Catholic, so going back to Catholic church, and like what the plans are, and the priest put together a video to explain how people will social distance or physically distance during the mass and what the new rules will be. And in talking with him, and he wasn't, you know, my dad is not a complaining kind of guy, but you could just hear in his voice that like him, like a lot of us, he thought when this is all over, then this will be all over, right? Or there's a hope. There's a part of your brain that thinks that. And then you realize, no, this is just a long, long process that some things may never be the same again. And there's just a comfort in going
in the words of Tupac.
Yeah, and there's a comfort in going back to a place and just being able to be yourself or go back to this place that really hasn't changed in your entire life. And now suddenly you have to be thinking about having Purell and not touching the doorknob when you come into the church and these things. And I have much more much less religious versions of this as far as me wanting to go back to my pizza shop dive bars and not have to worry about a stool between me. Like, for me, and this is really sad that I'm comparing church to the altar of alcohol, but, you know, I'm reading about in phase two or three when bars get to open again. Like, yeah, bars will open, but you won't be able to sit at the bar. You'll have to sit at a table.
Oh, boy, that's going like, to hit you where
yeah,
you
and it's
live.
Just so weird. Like, for me, and it's not even about the booze either. This is the same for me if I go into a diner. I always prefer to sit at the counter. I love sitting at counters. That's part of the whole thing for me. It's more important than the food itself. It's what is the environment. And so I can't imagine going into, like, my favorite bar, Teddy's, and being like, hello, I will be sitting in this table in the corner. Because the whole thing is sitting at the bar and making conversation with people or avoiding making conversation with people while you read your book. But still, there's something about sitting on that stool that is important to me. So I just know that that doesn't sound very important to other people. And in the same way, I feel like this buffet thing is probably really hitting some people in a way that it's like it's more than just the buffet. It's a reminder of, yeah, we're not just going back to these little comforts.
Oh, and yeah, like if you're a kid, I think in my whole childhood, I only got to go to one of these places a couple of times, but I remember going to, I can't remember if it was the Royal Fork or King's Table, but it was one of them. I think those might be owned by the same company. It was in Eureka, California. And I remember going into one of them and just it being like a highlight of my childhood because of the idea that you could, and they had soft serve ice cream. And it was just like, are you kidding me? Like I can just take any of this that I want and I can have all the ice cream I want at the end of it. Like it was really fun. So like, I can also imagine that for a lot of families, this is like a fun thing to do. The kids dig it. And yeah, you're right. It going away is probably making a lot of people really sad. I'll take this to a weird place. Cause you're talking about, you know, like wanting to sit on your favorite bar stool at Teddy's or whatever, but it's like, I have had this realization lately that I kind of don't miss the outside world as much as I thought I was going to. Like, I'm a very social person, but like, I am kind of, and I'm very lucky that, you know, I live in a house where I have a yard and, you know, like I can, it's, I have basically everything I need here. But it's like, I'm in this whole routine now. It's like, I feel like I'm turning into you a little bit, Andrew. Like, I go on my jog in the morning. And then, you know, I figure out what I'm going to eat that day. Sometimes I'll get it delivered. Sometimes I'll make something. And I, you know, watch my little TV shows or I play in my friendly poker game. And it's just like I'm sort of self-contained up here. And like, you know, a lot of people are talking about, and again, you see these photos of places where they've reopened something and people are flocking to it. And one, I think I'm a little bit paranoid. Like, I don't, even if they opened a restaurant here in Bellingham, I don't think I would go sit in it. And I also just, I'm somebody who has spent so much time out in the world, traveling for work and socializing with people and eating out. It's weird to me how much I actually am not missing that. I'm kind of just like content up here.
I don't know what's going on with me. Last week was a really hard week, and I don't really know why. I mean, actually, my back has been bad lately, and I think that kind of – when you – boy, you know, I'm sure there are people in our listening audience who have chronic pain, and I don't really know what that is like. But when you have like this kind of throbbing backache that is somewhat inexplicable for more than 2 or 3 days what I'm used to, and it just keeps going on, it is amazing how it affects everything else. Like, you're just cranky all the time, and like everything just seems like small things seem like such a big chore. And I was dealing with that last week, and also just like, I just think that for the most part, and this is well-tread territory, but like for the most part, everything is good with Genevieve and me. We're here in this apartment. We get along. We have our jobs, et cetera, et cetera. And also, I'm not somebody who goes out a lot. But I did realize last week with not feeling super great and being busy with stuff, like I went several days without probably even getting a breath of fresh air, without probably going outside for more than maybe taking out the trash for 30 seconds. And that's definitely not good. I think I need to like force myself to do, you're at least getting exercise. And there was a moment late last week where I was like, I might be going insane. And I remember thinking, I had to take a walk. It was an errand somewhere. I think I was going to walk to the grocery store because I didn't have that much to get in the grocery store. It's like, I don't know, a little more than half a mile from home. I'm like, I'll just walk to the grocery store. And I realized that I wasn't thinking about my mental health when I was at home. I was just going about doing my usual things. And it was something about going outside that sucked more. Like passing everybody on the sidewalk with their masks and me wearing a mask made me – it's kind of like going back to what I was saying before about like just – wanting to ignore this, or when I'm within these four walls, my apartment has exactly four walls, by the way. It's a very it had like 17, but we've been knocking things down. But you can maybe be glum and bored and all these things, but you're watching movies, you're playing video games, you're doing work, you're not thinking about what's going on outside. And then you go outside and you realize I have to put on a mask, and everybody around me is putting on a mask, and the world's fucked. Yeah, and I'm just kind of like, oh yeah, like we're still in this. It's like you can almost suspend disbelief when you're at home. And I remember just really having a moment last week when I went outside and just being like, oh, I just want this to be over so bad. And then having that secondary wave of over isn't really over. What does over look like?
Right. Until there's a vaccine or a cure, it's, you know, we're going to be in some version of this life because the virus doesn't go away. It may, you know, we may knock it down. We may flatten the curve, but obviously it's coming back. Speaking of masks, did you see this article I sent you from the BBC about clear face masks or face masks that have a transparent window?
Yeah.
It was written by a writer named Jasmine Taylor Coleman for the BBC, talking about something that I had never actually thought about before, because I'm really obsessed with only my experience, which is for people who are deaf or hard of hearing, this mask thing is a real bummer if they were somebody who was using lip reading as a way of communicating. And so they are now designing these masks that have a clear window in them. And I will tell you, there is something upsetting about this mask. Like, I understand the practicality of it. And if it were to make the lives better for people who are deaf or hard of hearing, I would do it. But man, there is something really, really weird about a mask with a clear window pane on it, right?
Yeah, definitely. And like you say, I don't want to be like, you know, we got to do things to make sure that everybody can, you know, experience the world, not just, you know, we don't want to be ableist about it. But I do look at these masks and I'm like, ugh, it definitely triggers something in me. And I will admit that also, I don't like masks. Like, going outside, I got an email from somebody who really associated with me the last time I said this too, that like, I don't know if it triggers something in me the same if it triggers the same thing in me that sort of makes me not like Halloween when people are hiding behind thick makeup and various masks, or not hiding, that's the wrong way to put it, but it just makes me feel very unsettled.
Lurking.
Yeah, lurking. Threatening. Pouncing. Anyway, Halloweens were rough for me growing up.
Really?
Everybody dressed up in Halloween, in California raisin garbage bags, and they just all surrounded me and menaced me.
I thought you didn't like Halloween because you feel like it's too much show. It's too much showing off. It's too much look at me.
I don't know what I think. I think it's a combination of a bunch of weird broken things in my brain. But there is something about a mask that I don't like mask society. And I'm not saying I'm not doing it or that we shouldn't do it. I understand that. Please, nobody holler at me via email. I understand the need, and I'm partaking. But I don't like it. I don't like going outside and seeing everybody wearing masks. It makes me uncomfortable.
Hmm. Yeah, it is a very, very visual reminder that the world is not normal. And I know what you mean. I'll have these waves where I'm just driving down the street and it's almost like you came out of a coma or something, because you're just like, this is real. This is happening. This is like everyone's just wearing, I mean, again, ideally everyone's wearing masks. I've already talked about, I like it for myself because I am so, I guess you could say, vain or insecure. I feel like those are two sides of the same coin, that I'm always in some part of my brain aware that my people are looking at my face. I mean, not like people are like, are you the guy from the podcast? I'm talking about just being in the grocery store. What I realized when I started wearing the mask was I'm so relaxed because I know no one can see my face. There is something, you want to talk about a broken brain. There is something deeply weird about that. But also what I've been really struggling with is just deep rage at people that are not wearing masks, like in the store. It just seems to be so selfish to me. It's like, because what we know is that the mask really protects other people, because if you were to sneeze or cough, it keeps the droplets inside, or most of them. So, I mean, wearing a mask is the ultimate sign of being a team player. It's the ultimate sign of saying, hey, let's all try to stay healthy, and I'm going to protect you from what I might have. So when someone is walking around the grocery store and they don't have a mask on, it's as if they're just holding up a middle finger to my face. And I've come so close to just saying to, and I'm going to use a swear word here, I'm going to go all Bruce Hornsby on it. I've been so close to, and I'm, again, you know, I'm like not, like, I can't stress, I'm not drunk when this is happening. It's like the middle of the day. I'm not in an otherwise triggered state, but I've been so close to just saying to people, put a fucking mask on. Like, I literally want to just say that when I see somebody in the grocery store with no mask on. Like, assuming you have access to a mask, which at this point, just about everybody, certainly who would be in that particular grocery store. And it's weird because it's not, at the beginning, I think I thought it was maybe more boomers, but it's just all ages, all genders, all like races. Like, it's weird. There's no predicting who's just going to be wandering around the store with no mask on, or with their boyfriend or girlfriend or wife or husband not in a mask, which is another thing. It's like, aren't we trying to go one at a time to these grocery stores for – but it's like I'm going to try to get through this without confronting someone, because it doesn't do any good. But I can feel it building, Andrew. I am going to at some point say to some – like a person not in a mask is going to like – say something to me or somehow do the wrong thing, and I'm going to go off, and it's going to be like months of building anger. It's not going to be pretty.
Good Lord. Looking forward to spending a week with you.
I'm just saying, you better be wearing a mask the entire time.
You know what's funny? And I'm such a petty man, and I'm a rule follower, and especially if I'm following a rule I don't like wearing a mask and others aren't, I can get on my high horse about things. I saw somebody, probably a frontline delivery worker who is officially a hero in America now, but parked temporarily in the bike lane on my road yesterday, and I was so rip mad about it. I'm saying rip mad. I don't want to be all Hornsby. I was very angry about it. I didn't do anything. I saw it and got angry. But the mask in the grocery store thing, it doesn't I'm not in my head about that as much, and I don't know exactly why. In fact, I'm almost – here we go. Here we go. I almost am more irritated by the high horses the people on their high horses, the people who are going on these. And I'm not talking about you here, and I'm not trying to fire shots, but I'm just being honest. Like, these long rants on Twitter about this woman. Like, I don't know how I get sucked into reading these things, but this one woman was talking about how angry she was, and she confronted some woman as she was walking around Silver Lake. And you and I can both picture Silver Lake, the track around Silver Lake. Apparently it's one way now, and you're supposed to wear a mask. And this one person wasn't wearing a mask and maybe walking the wrong way. And this Twitter writer wrote this whole long thread very poetically and angrily about how she confronted this person. I was just like, you're the asshole. Like, everything that you just did put yourself in more harm's way as you confronted this woman and stopped her on the track and had this confrontation with her. Like, everybody who is flying off the handle, and I understand it, like, we're all manifesting our fears and anger in different ways, and there's no reason why on this particular issue I happen to be on the other side of this one, because usually I'm the one who's acting completely irrational, so I'm not trying to point fingers here. But if I'm being honest, right now the people who I'm finding the most annoying are the people who are just like kind of screaming at a high pitch at everybody else. Like, how about we all just mind our own business and try to, you know, have some grace about these things is kind of where I am. But maybe that's just because I'm shaken in my own way too.
I mean, I actually agree with what you're saying. I mean, it's not going to do any good for me to just like randomly start yelling at people in the grocery store. It's not going to change their behavior. And you're right. If anything, I'm going to create more droplets doing that. So, like, I have had the thought, if you punch someone in the face, are you vectoring? Like, how much of their like, what's the you know, contamination from that? But I'm with you. Like, intellectually, I understand that people are doing their best, and it serves no purpose for me to be judgy, and it serves no purpose for me to confront anyone. And so far it hasn't happened, because luckily what I've just basically done is, if someone's not wearing a mask, I just give them a really wide berth. And I just, but internally, and maybe it's because I so rarely follow the rules, Andrew, that like, it's a new experience for me to be following the rules and then to see someone flagrantly not following them. Like I said, what I'm concerned about is that I'm going to be somewhere and some guy in a MAGA hat is going to be not wearing a mask and is going to say something or step too close to me or something, and I'm just going to get super triggered and go off, which is not a good look and not something I should do. And I'm not trying to like act like I'm powerless to control it, but I do worry that I'm going to slip up at some point. What I've basically been doing these days is just shooting people the hardest daggers from behind the mask, which I don't know if they even pick up on, but it's like, I will give this look that's just like, what is wrong with you? That's the look that I have on my face or in my eyes at all times when I'm have to be relatively close to somebody who's not wearing a mask.
Well, just so I don't sound holier than thou, I want everybody to know that I am still a broken, petty, awful person, because for some reason, the thing that triggers me is the people who are still not following the one-way rules at the grocery store. And like, there's no reason why that should trigger me more than the mask. And I know it's kind of funny because it fits into my personality so perfectly, but also like, it makes no sense. Like, wearing a mask is more important than going the right way down an aisle. But for me to have to dodge somebody, like, because I hate that rule. I mean, I understand the rule. I hate following it, and I do it. And I know, you know, I've got my whole thing with my grocery store layout, and now I realize if I missed something in the one aisle, I need to loop all the way back around because I'm not going to break that rule. And then, you know, I'm having to move my cart around. For me, it's not even usually boomers, as you said. It's almost always younger people. It's people in their, I don't know, 20s and younger that I notice in the grocery store who aren't wearing masks and are there with their partners or whatever. And they're just like strolling down the aisle the wrong way after I just did this huge long loop-de-loop to make sure that I was following the rule. Those are the people that I try to like, I stare daggers at them, and then I look down at the floor where they're standing on a giant red arrow that says one way. And why does that trigger me and not the other? I don't know, because I'm just a big, messy soup of emotions. One thing I wanted to say, though, to get off the anger thing for a second, I liked this one tweet. Our friend Hannah was tweeting about the efficacy of masks and how the science isn't really clear on the benefits of them, but generally speaking, they certainly can't do any harm, and they certainly can protect other people around you. And so she was basically saying, yeah, okay, the science is a little bit fuzzy right now, but do it because you're a part of this goddamn society and we should be doing it. And somebody
wrote Hornsby.
And somebody wrote underneath, yeah, I think of it as sort of the brown M&M story, whether or not that's apocryphal, but was it it wasn't Van Halen. Was it Van Halen, the brown M&M story? I'm kind of blanking on the details.
Yeah, it was one of those bands, and yeah, famously, I always heard it. I've heard like so many versions of it, but yeah, it was like the idea was their rider said, you know, no certain color of M&Ms are, so someone would have to pick them all out. And the idea was if the person running the concert was demonstrating that level of care and specificity down to the removing a certain color of M&M, it would mean that everything else was going to be really well handled and safe, including like lighting and pyrotechnics and stuff.
That's right. It was Van Halen and it was brown M&Ms. And so this tweeter was saying that essentially I think of it as that story, which is if you're wearing a mask, not only are you saying, hey, I'm wearing a mask, but you're also saying I'm taking this seriously and I'm doing everything else right as well. And I'm signaling to the world that we're kind of in this together and I'm paying attention to all the details during this. And I thought that was kind of an interesting way of looking at it too.
It is amazing though. If you get out of the major cities, like I went down to Mount St. Helens and did that TV story. And then as I was driving out, I was getting gas in a place called Toledo, Washington. And you'd have thunk that had two heads or something. When I walked into the gas station to pay with my mask on, there was, and I'm not trying to besmirch the fine residents of Toledo, Washington, but it's like, you know, if you're in Bellingham and I live in a relatively affluent area and presumably a lot of people who have, you know, probably college education or whatever, the majority of people are wearing masks. And I'm sure that in Seattle and the places that you go, Andrew, if you're going to that Whole Foods in your neighborhood, high percentage of mask wearing. But you go out into the places outside of the major cities, and it is like, in my experience, it's just like COVID what? No one's wearing a mask. No one's distancing. No one's acting like it's even a thing.
Yeah, in King County, I think that the rule actually started last week that King County, it's the law now, you have to wear a mask if you're inside of a public place, like a store
something. Nice.
Yeah, and so, and I did see some people enforcing it. I was at the weed shop the other day just for research purposes, and, and you know, they have very strict rules. And I think the people who run these weed shops here, especially the most respectable ones, they really want to make sure that everybody, them and their customers, are following all rules within the letter of the law, because they're a new industry that was very controversial and maybe remains controversial, and they don't want to do anything to have their license threatened or to even potentially threaten the kind of new, let's say, budding market.
Let's not say that, but okay.
Budding market.
I mean, it's weird.
Funny. By the way, got another pitch for disposable media from listener Mike, who wants to do a show called Blunt Talk. It talks about all things weed. anyway, and they and the people who were behind the counter were. I was in there for probably, no joke, I don't know, 5 minutes tops. I just went in, grabbed something, and was going to leave. In the time I was there, two people came in without masks, and they had to be asked, you know, they were told to leave. Like, sorry, it's a law, and they're taking it very, very seriously. So I don't know exactly what you said that got me on. But you were saying, like, kind of getting out into the other areas, and you live in a different county than me, so I don't – what is your county again?
Whatcom is what it's called.
Oh, right, okay, yeah. So I don't know if Whatcom has that. I bet you the more rural areas do not have those rules.
Yeah, and Carrie said the same thing about just if you get out in like the neighboring areas called Linden. Linden, Washington is the one place Donald Trump came to when he was campaigning. Hmm. Like it was one place in Washington State. And I mean, there are other places where he's probably popular, but that just kind of describes the general vibe in Linden. The funny part is he stiffed the town of Linden, I think, or the local airport or whatever, because there was like a, you know, it's had to land that stupid plane and like they never paid for it, which I think is hilarious and fitting. But anyway, not to make it political. But if you get out, yeah, you just get out of the city and it just seems like it's a really different mindset. And on the, you know, I'm spending all this time talking about how much it annoys me. And then on the other hand, I can kind of understand it because we're talking to Carrie's mom. She came over, you know, was in the yard, didn't come in the house. We were just sitting like 10 feet apart chatting this weekend. And, you know, her mom and dad are not, they're not elderly yet, but they're not young, and their friends are all in the same age range. And I said, do you know anyone who's actually sick with this? And they said, no. And it's like, and by the way, her parents are very much following the rules. Like, they take it really seriously. But it's like, if I'm somebody who doesn't actually know anyone who's had it, it is an abstract thought. And like, I guess I'm just so trusting of science and the Anthony Fauci's of the world that I'm just, it feels really real to me. It feels like I could get it at any moment. It feels like if someone's not wearing a mask, they're trying to harm me. Like, there's a lot around that. But on the other hand, I could see somebody just being like, is this really as big of a thing as they're saying it is when you don't know anyone who's had it?
You want to talk about radical honesty? Am I allowed to use that term, or have you trademarked that?
Bill McMahon owns it, weirdly.
Okay. Let me power into this radical honesty story. This is like, honestly, I
Linda owns Power In.
I hesitate to say this because it might actually make the listeners angry at me. But I'm not talking about what I'm doing here. I'm just talking about what's in my heart. I saw a photograph of a family member of mine who lives in a different state, very excited that restaurants were open again in their state. And there's a photo of them in what is a bar. Now it's a bar that serves food. And they took a picture of their food and they took a picture of themselves, like a selfie with them, like literally, like kind of, well, not, yeah, literally cheek and jowl. I don't know, literally cheek to cheek with a friend of theirs with a selfie in this bar on a Friday night or a Saturday night. And just in the caption was something along the lines of like, so great to be free again. And I don't think it was necessarily a political statement. I think this was a person who was just like all of us, really sick of staying at home and likes nightlife and those types of things that a lot of us like. And the law had changed there and they were allowed to go to this restaurant and bar. Everything they did was totally legal. But I also sort of felt like I don't think the idea of opening restaurants is so that you can get drunk and literally take selfies with people that you're touching. You know, like that doesn't seem right to me. And it kind of pissed me off a little bit. And I was thinking about it more and more. And I was thinking maybe what ticks me off is that I'm just jealous because, and this is like kind of the thing that people are going to hate for me to admit, but I was doing some soul searching about it. And I thought, let's say that we live in some fantasy world where Teddy's is open. It's or like somehow it's like a speakeasy type of situation, although you don't have to give a password. But like if somebody said, hey, Andrew, guess what? Not a lot of people know this. If you look at Teddy's from the outside, it looks like it's closed. But actually, there's a secret entrance and everything in there is just like it was four months ago. Right. And the guys are waiting for you in there. You can just go in this entrance. Nobody will ever know. You don't have to talk about it on the show. Nobody will see you.
There's
nobody
a guy
will
named
know.
Grady, who's tending
yeah,
bar.
You've always been here. Right. But I think you see where I'm going with this. If I could get away with it, I think I would, because I haven't seen the threat right in my face either. And I know that's wrong. I want to make that clear for everybody who does want to like yell at me right now. I understand. I'm not saying I'm doing it, but I think I would be very, very tempted to. And I think that there was a hypocrisy in me maybe being angry at this photo that I saw, knowing that in my heart of hearts, if I could get away with it, I probably would. Now, would I take a photo of it and send it to people around the country who can say like, oh, look, you're whooping it up at your bar, whatever. But I don't know. There's probably a little dishonesty when it comes to me and this whole situation, too. Maybe I do feel a little like I don't know. I don't know what that says about me. Just an asshole, as Hornsby would say.
I love that forever on this show, when somebody swears, it's going to be a Hornsby.
Be honest, though. Yeah. What do you think about that? As somebody who is like really frustrated with everything that you've been saying, do you want to yell at me? You can yell at me. I'll just mute.
No, because I understand the impulse completely. I mean, that's why I am actually surprised. Like, okay, there's a casino that's now open.
Yeah, I heard about
Angel
that.
Of the Winds. Mm-hmm. And when we were having our very exclusive, very fulfilling friend Zoom the other night that you weren't invited to, somebody on the Zoom had actually been out there and like waited in line, stood in line for 2 hours to actually go in there. And I am surprised that I have had no interest in going to that, because I love casinos and it's a way for me to blow off steam and, let's be honest, probably numb out to some degree. But like, again, I'm not trying to paint myself in glory, as you would say here, and act like, you know, I have my impulses are so pure. But for whatever reason, I just am. I understand the impulse, and yet also I'm surprised at how much I don't want to go be around people right now. Hmm. But now if the slow pitch opened, which is like a local casino here in Bellingham that's staffed by people that I really like, and I sort of know some of the people there, I guess some of the regulars. If the slow pitch was open, that might be different for me, just because I do like being there. I like the people. It gives me a good feeling, the whole thing. Like, it's different than Angel of the Winds Casino, which I don't have a like strong emotional connection to. So I don't know. Yeah, I'm gonna do the same thought experiment. If the slow pitch, if there was some Shining-esque experience, like, you know, backdoor entrance where you could go in and everything's normal in there and no one knows, it would be tempting, I'm sure, for me. But I don't think you're I understand the impulse, and I mean, I am going to make you stay on the lower level of the safe undisclosed location all mm-hmm. of next week. I mean, we're going to be broadcasting from different parts of the house because there's no flipping way I'm getting near you, Typhoid Mary.
Just because my thoughts are impure. Wow.
Yes,
I respect
exactly.
that.
Yeah. As a person raised Catholic, you should really be able to identify with this whole thing.
All right. I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I got to say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it here. This is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week, I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man. It's not from a female.
All righty. Any emails or V-mails, Andrew, that you would like to share with us before we wrap this up today?
I would like to share a couple. I got this from Alan, okay, who says, good morning, Luke and Andrew. Leading me to believe that Alan wrote this in the morning. Says, listening to yesterday's episode, number 3169, and around the 43-minute mark, Luke mentioned imitation cookies like Hydrox.
Uh-huh.
Well, Alan says, Oreo is the actual imposter. Hydrox came out in 1908. Oreo came out in 1912. It just goes to show sometimes it's not about being first, but having a bigger ad spend and a better name, which reminds me of how people drank Flavor-Aide, not Kool-Aid, at Jonestown. Although Kool-Aid gets all the credit. Well, I guess since Kool-Aid is still around, it goes to show that there's no such thing as bad publicity, even though the people get the company wrong. I had no idea. Did you know that it was Flavor-Aide at Jonestown?
I did, because I read something about it a while ago. Mm. But I did. I mean, are we going to do this? Are we going to make the world's darkest joke? I mean, I think that the Jonestown folks knew something was up when the Kool-Aid jug emerged from the jungle. It doesn't even make sense as a joke because it was Flavor-Aide.
What did he say? Did he have a catchphrase, or did he just burst onto the scene and yell?
He would just bust through like brick walls, right? And then, yeah. Oh, what did he say? Would he say Wacky Wild Kool-Aid style, or was that just the song?
I thought he said, hey, 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 but that is somebody else.
I know. I thought I'm combining it with like Fat Albert,
yeah,
a bunch of other things.
Let's just find one. Kool-Aid jug commercial. It's not. I guess it's a pitcher, not a jug, right?
What's the difference?
Let's see here. Classic Kool-Aid Man commercial. This is a compilation, so buckle up.
All right, I'm ready.
Here we go. Oh, yeah. He yelled, oh, yeah, of course.
Oh, yeah. Uh-oh.
Huh?
That's Pete Rose. That's a Pete Rose commercial, man. He just burst onto the scene at a Reds game, I think.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. Uh-oh.
Huh?
Hey, hey!
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Gorlick!
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's just a compilation of him busting through various walls.
Just says,
saying,
oh, yeah.
Of course. Okay, so that's that. If you want to move on, I do have one more email I can share with you.
Yes.
Here.
Okay, Hydrox was first.
Yeah.
But Oreo has made the, for some reason we see Oreo as, at least most people I think of Oreo as the superior version of that cookie.
Which I assume it is. I don't know if I've ever had Hydrox.
Yeah, I feel like we might have had it when I was a kid, but actually I don't know. My mom's weirdly a purist about certain things. I told you the other day that she's very into whole milk. And so we always grew up drinking vitamin D or whole milk. And also, she loves Oreo cookies, and so I don't know if she would have ever gotten Hydrox. She might have thought that was, that was where the money was. Like we were gonna allocate, even if it was a little more expensive. And also, that's a question: are Oreos more than Hydrox?
Oh, a price point?
Yeah.
My guess is yes. I don't know if I even knew about Hydrox until you told me about them. I didn't know what Hydrox were until I met Luke Burbank on the Greyhound bus. Okay, so I got a sausage question here from a listener, Jesse, who says, Andrew, as the foremost expert on sausage that I'm aware of, and as someone from an area with a high concentration of Polish people / background, which, by the way, I'm 50% Polish myself. I'm saying that, not Jesse. How do you pronounce kielbasa? I've always pronounced it kielbasa. Until today, when my wife's parents laughed at us, saying that it's pronounced kubesa. Kubesa,
what?
If I'm pronouncing that right.
K-O-O-B-A-E-S-A.
Kubesa. They are of Polish descent from an area with a large Polish population. Wikipedia seems to indicate that this was the Polish pronunciation of the sausage. What have you heard? What do you think is correct? All right, so we'll leave that there. And I said, as I said reading it first, I say kielbasa, which I don't know if that's real or not. When you go to the dictionary, and I didn't preview this, but this is what the dictionary says.
Kielbasa.
So that's closer to how I say it, kielbasa.
Kielbasa.
But I like this kubesu thing, kubesa.
I thought I heard you say kielbasi one time too.
Oh yeah, some people in my family say that as well. Although some people in my family call them roller coasters. So what am I supposed to do with that?
You also call it a rolly bag, which I thought was something you had made up, but I've always called it a roller bag.
Then
I've heard a lot of other people call it rolly bag. I think that's one of those things that's probably just regional.
Oh, that's interesting. I think I got that from Genevieve, honestly. I don't even know because I don't think I really – I never had a rolly bag until I was an adult. Like for me growing up, suitcases were things that with handles that you carried like a businessman.
That's one of those things, and I'm not just trying to do an ad for – intermittent sponsor Away Luggage, although I do love that stuff.
Me too.
In all truth.
Yeah.
But that's one of those little life improvements. I should have put this in one of the ads because it's a compelling sales pitch. But like the first time I ever traveled outside of the country other than Canada was I went to Italy for my honeymoon after my first wedding, which I remember just the misery of carrying these huge suitcases, which were just like, I probably got them from my parents, who I'm sure had picked them up at a rummage sale. They didn't match. They had no wheels. They were just like enormous, really heavy. Like it was like lugging this luggage around the city of Venice. I just remember vividly what a living nightmare it was. And then one day I got a bag that had wheels on it, and I was like, everything has now just changed in my life. I am never going back to not having that. And I think, I was obviously raised, we didn't buy new things or nice things. My mom, I'm sure, still has some jacked up, secondhand suitcase that she's been, back in the before times, carrying through airports. It's like, it is just so vastly superior to have something with wheels on it.
Yeah, and also balance. I mean, now I really am just doing an Away Luggage ad, and I don't even know if they're technically a sponsor anymore. Try using the promo code TBTL.
You got to get them back.
Yeah, but legitimately, like, the rolly bag I had before that had two wheels on the back. It didn't have the four-wheel system. And also, like, the way it had pockets on it, I love to fill those outer pockets. But the outer pockets totally set that thing off balance. So bag always wanted to tip over, like at an airport. You probably saw it happen on some of our bigger trips, Luke, where I had to really pack that thing to the gills. And then Away comes along and has these bags. And again, they're not paying me for this, and I don't even know if they're a sponsor anymore, but those things were great. It's like you just put up with shit for so long, and then all of a sudden you buy a new something, and you're like, oh my God, why was I putting up with that shit? Like, it was such a better experience.
That honeymoon in Italy, I'm sure I've told this story before, but I was in charge of one thing, which was the return travel plans. And I just, for some reason, misunderstood or misremembered what time we were supposed to leave from, like, Rome. So we're down, I don't know where we were, some other part of Italy, and we're going to go get on the train and go up to Rome to get on the flight. And I look at the airplane tickets, which, by the way, were printed out because it was back then, and I just realized that the flight's leaving in, like, an hour.
That is a stress dream. Oh my God.
I know, right? Like, that would never happen to me now. I don't know if I was just footloose and fancy free. Like, I can't imagine not literally knowing the time that the flight, international flight, was going to happen. But so we went up there, and amazingly, they were like, they just rebooked us for the next day. I don't think they even charged us anything. But then we had to go get a hotel. We stayed in a hotel that was, like, attached to the airport, which I remember that being kind of a big spend at the time. And then we flew back, and then the next day was 9/11.
Oh, my God.
And, like, had my idiocy around the ticket led us to actually have to stay a couple extra days, I don't know if that would realistically happen. But, like, it was – like, everybody got stuck wherever they were post 9/11 for a long time. We came very close to being stuck in Italy because I didn't read the airplane ticket.
My gosh. Okay, since it's late in the show here, and I get the impression that you might have to run, but I'll try to make this quick. I didn't want to start the show with more dream talk today, and this is not a long one, and it doesn't involve insects, you'll be happy to know. But I did have a weird dream last night that's somewhat TBTL related, because in my dream, Genevieve's family wanted to take us on a last-minute trip to Jakarta, but just a quick little trip to Jakarta. It was going to be literally 24 hours in Jakarta. Come on, Andrew, let's do it. And I was unexpectedly and uncharacteristically sanguine about the whole thing. I'm like, yeah, 24 hours, that sounds good. But the one thing that in the back of my mind was, well, the TB Telethon does start tomorrow, so we got to make sure that we come back in time. This can only be 24 hours. And I didn't say that to anybody because I didn't want to be the usual worry wart. But then finally, and this is near the end of the dream, I go up to Genevieve's dad and I just said, hey, Tom, listen, not a huge deal. I'm looking forward to this. But just so you know, like, Monday is like pretty much the biggest day on the TBTL calendar. It's really important that I get back. It has to just be 24 hours. And he just kind of laughed at me and just kind of gave me a you worry too much kid kind of look. And then I woke up. Actually, that's not true. I then made it to Jakarta and woke up.
You did?
I did, because I remember I was then snuggling the cutest cat in the world in Jakarta, and it was a cat that was mostly gray with some hints of blue and yellow, which sounds weird and sci-fi-y, but it was really beautiful. I'm done.
What was Jakarta like?
All I saw was that wherever I woke up on somebody's living room floor, and then this cat came and snuggled with me. That's all I know of Jakarta.
That's great. I like, you seem pretty chill in your dreams.
I know. I'm better in my dreams for the most part. Even when that bug came out, I just, you know, I was freaking out, but I had the self-presence to grab my phone and take some videos of it.
Yeah. All right. On that note, I think we're going to wrap things up for today, but don't you worry, folks. We're going to be right back here tomorrow with more imaginary radio for you. We've got, you know, 24 hours to have more dreams, take more jogs, judge more people from behind our masks. I mean, we're going to live a whole life in the next 24 hours and then report back to you. So please join us for that. Until then, enjoy your Tuesday. Stay safe. Take care of each other. And please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
To the blocks, goodbye. To the hood, goodbye. To the streets,
I can't say goodbye.
To the hood,
goodbye.
To the blocks,
goodbye.
To the streets,
I can't say goodbye.
To the blocks,
goodbye.
To the streets,
goodbye.
To the hood,
I can't say goodbye.
To the hood,
goodbye.
To the blocks,
goodbye.
To the homies, whoa. I guess it's true.
You can't take the hood out the homeboy. Plus my hood just lost another homeboy. Another one got life and we don't know if he coming home, boy. The industry tell me just leave it alone, boy. Let them do them, take care of your own, boy. But I sit back, think about before I was grown, boy, and had dreams of being a dope boy. Yeah, I was running from the popo, banging for the turf, late night hunting, putting in work. Hood day coming, airbrush shirt, payday at the spot, got my hair cut first. Made mom sick when I wouldn't go to church. Yeah, I live in the burbs, but I think 21st. I know since I left that it's gotten much worse, but I'd still be there if I couldn't write a verse.
Home, I'm a man, I gotta take care of my family.
Take care.
My family's precious in my life.
Home,
I know my mind should be on shining.
I know my mind should be
power out.